Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. How about an advertising campaign to unseat a dictator? Or a look at the world of backup singers, a film that our critics just loved? Or yet another episode in a decades-long documentary project that began in 1964 that follows 10 boys and 4 girls from age 12 until 56. Those are just some of the films we're talking about today as we span the globe one more time with our independent and documentary film critics. They are film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, welcome back, as always.
Thank you very much, Steve.
KCUR's own Steve Walker is here. Steven.
Hi, Steve.
And Bob Butler, the former film critic for The Star, who now works at the Kansas City Public Library. You can read his movie reviews at butlerscinemascene.com. Bob, how are you?
Greetings.
Well, a drum roll, please, and away we go. Well, the Oscars don't come and go without the three of you having some definite opinions about what happened with them. Cynthia, what was your take?
I thought the DVD Gurus last Wednesday did a very nice job assessing the Oscars.
They usually do.
I was so put off by Seth. I'm the wrong demographic, I understand that, but I was just so put off by him. And, you know, if I were some of the actors, I would have gotten up and left. I mean, I just thought the guy...
Well, it looked like some of the actors wanted to get up and leave looking at their faces in the crowd when the camera shot that way.
The producers are just way off of track of what the Oscars, I think, should be. And then there were glorious moments.
Shirley Bassey singing Goldfinger,
exactly,
for one.
That was one of them.
That was unbelievable.
And Barbara Streisand showing up.
And Charlize Theron dancing, holy moly.
Well, in general, Charlize Theron.
Anyway, so there were moments, and I thought, well, you know what it could or should be. Let's focus on that and not crude, stupid, rude musical numbers.
Well, did the host bug the two of you?
Hated him.
Did you, too?
I hated him. 25 minutes in, he was still farting around with William Shatner, and I'm like, watching it with, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's not long enough already.
Yeah.
It's become the Seth MacFarlane show, and he's not funny at all.
I wasn't quite as down on him as you two are, but...
I find myself being very lukewarm. I understand the guy's humor. It's just that... It isn't the Oscars anymore, you know?
What is it then?
They are trying so hard to be relevant that they've forgotten what it is that makes the Oscars in the first place.
And people kept saying it. And if you saw the Golden Globes with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey hosting it, that was one of the funniest award shows ever. Those two were on top of their game. They're hilarious, hilariously self-deprecating.
And they had fun with the audience.
Yeah.
The audience had fun with them.
Well, those two should be the hostesses for life.
They've already said, no way.
They're not going to do it next year?
Oh, no. Well, I don't know about the Globes, but Tina Fey said, don't ask me. I'm not doing the Oscars.
Why?
No.
It's a thankless task.
Happens. It is thankless, right.
Well, it's a lot of money, though, isn't it?
Well, you also get...
I think you'll find that most of the hosts have, at best, broken even because of all the time
backlash
it takes and all the shows they can't do in the meantime.
Right. Jon Stewart was a very good host, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Crystal was fine. I mean, Franco and Anne Hathaway... 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
Was dreadful.
That was dreadful.
That was almost
that was bad.
As bad. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, how about the movies that actually won the awards? Any grand thoughts about Best Picture and Argo and all of that or not?
Well, I think the big surprise, but it wasn't a surprise to Bob. I mean, you predicted that Ang Lee was going to get the director. And I think from the get-go, everybody thought, well, there's such a push for Lincoln and Spielberg again, and, you know, it's going to happen. It didn't. And the awards got spread around. I was rather surprised by that.
Christoph Waltz surprised me a lot.
That
was
me.
One that no one had really predicted. They were all saying it was De Niro's overdue.
That was the best supporting actor.
Best supporting. Mm-hmm. Although he's in the
he's the lead actor.
Scene for 90 minutes. I don't know how he got a supporting actor or not. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense.
I think one of the positive things about the Oscars is that it brings so many good independent films to the attention of an audience.
More so as the years pass. Right,
and they see such a bump up, you know, once they get the awards. Also, the documentary category, we have a lot of attention towards some very worthy documentaries.
Well, here's a classic case of the Oscars not recognizing what they really have going for them. 5 years ago, was it, they beefed up Best Picture from 5 nominees to as many as 10. The idea being that some of those popular movies, some of those comic book movies that people love are going to get nominated. And did the Batman movie get nominated this year? No.
Yeah.
And there was only 9 nominees, so if they'd wanted to, they could have. The fact is, trying to make the Oscars populist is a terrible mistake. because it's supposed to be about excellence. Mm-hmm. And need I tell you that excellence and popularity are not necessarily handmaids.
Right. You know, Bob, I didn't realize they just nominated 9 films for Best Picture as opposed to they could have gone to 10. Why didn't they go to 10?
It's a convoluted
mathematical. There's an algorithm.
It's right. I mean, there is. Mm-hmm. That's a film like Amour, that tentpole picture. I'm kidding. Got nominated. That was an honor of excellence in Amour's case.
That's right. People voted for it just because they said, "My God, this was amazing."
Yeah.
And Beasts of the Southern Wild too. Another example, I think, of a very original film that just didn't have an audience.
So, what is the answer to the question about why Ben Affleck wasn't even nominated for a Best Director award, even though his film won Best Picture? What's the issue there? Is it a political thing? People don't like Ben? He's made so many flops in the past.
I think part of it,
Jennifer Lopez, or did he marry her?
It's a popularity contest.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, Catherine Bigelow didn't either for Zero Dark Thirty, which shocked me.
And that was shocking, too.
Shocking.
Hey,
absolutely.
10 Best Picture slots, 5 directors. Someone gets hurt.
Right. And Affleck is laughing all the way to.
I think
the critical attention he has received because of that.
Catherine Bigelow deserved to be nominated.
Oh, absolutely.
And did Ben Affleck deserve to be nominated?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
How can a film be nominated for Best Picture and the person at the helm is not nominated for Best Director?
Ben Zeitlin shouldn't have been nominated for Beast of the Southern Wild. I think, but
the best
compared
line
to Bigelow's work,
best line in the show. Daniel Day-Lewis saying that.
He was going to play Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher. And Spielberg had Meryl Streep in mind for Lincoln. But
that's funny.
That's our look at the Oscars here.
When it comes to,
we are in March, obviously. How slow is this time of year in the film world? Is this the dregs when it comes to
for
films?
Our kind of films, for it's very, films, very
it slow.
This is rough.
Because we only have 2 movies, opening films to discuss today, as a matter of fact.
Why is that? Because isn't there a huge supply of films waiting for placement?
It's so complicated, and we've addressed it before. But there were 2 films that opened today. One's playing Tivoli and the Fine Arts. We weren't allowed to see in advance.
Why?
Because they didn't bother to let us see it or arrange for us to see it.
Well, we even asked to see it.
We asked to see it very nicely. Another one called Dead Man Down with Colin Farrell. It's directed by the Swedish director, I believe, who did the first Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. A bit perfect for our show.
Yeah.
Were we allowed to see it? No.
But what's going on?
They're trying to hide it. They don't have the money to send us a 98-cent screener. I don't know, Steve. I wish I knew.
I think part of it indicates that the distributors aren't backing these particular films. I think they just are giving it theatrical release, hoping it's going to DVD and make their money that way.
Now, when it used to, in the case of about 8 or 9 years ago, when with horror movies and things like that, they would not show them for critics, it made sense. These were commercial movies. Teenagers went to them. Teenagers didn't read reviews.
Right.
No problem. But you've got a movie with Tommy Lee Jones playing Douglas MacArthur here.
Right.
And you'd think, well, what kind of audience is going to go for that? Grown-ups. Grown-ups who remember World War II. Grown-ups who go to places like the Tivoli and the Fine Arts Theaters where they're showing this movie. Why not send us that little cheap piece of plastic? Let us watch it. And
exactly.
At the very least, your local critic might shoehorn a few ticket buyers into the theater, might attract a few. Otherwise, you're throwing it out there to die. That's all it amounts to.
Our demographic of this panel, us four sitting at this table, are like elderly Aleutians
Listen,
let me finish my sentence. Elderly.
You didn't start off very well, by the way.
Aleutians.
Just for the record. Yeah.
We're like, akin to what they do to the elderly in the Aleutians in northern Canada, as far as appealing to our demographic. You've had your movies, sit on this berg and kick you out to the ocean. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But there are those few that do happen, like the couple of documentaries we'll talk about later. But it's tough. It's a tough business for thinking audiences.
It seems like this is documentary day because the 2 films opening are documentaries. Mm-hmm. And I just came back from the True False Film Festival this past weekend.
I was going to ask about that.
Columbia, Missouri.
If any of our callers happen to attend the True False Film Festival and want to share their experience, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up-to-date at kcur.org, or just tweet us at kcur-up-to-date, Stephen.
Let me amend my comment in case anyone outside this room was offended. because I don't care really in here. But let's look at the movie Quartet. We talked about it on the last show. Dustin Hoffman directed it. It stars Maggie Smith. Today, 4 weeks later, it's opening wide. Now that they've seen that audiences are actually going to this film, then people like these behemoths like AMC will say, okay, well, maybe we'll make a dime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how cynical they are, the big companies.
Yeah. Okay. How about the True False Film Festival, Cynthia?
Yes, Steve, this is the 10th year that two guys, David Wilson and Paul Sturtz, have brought together to the city of Columbia, Missouri, some of the best documentary films and best documentary filmmakers. It runs for about 3.5 days. There are about 37 feature documentary films,
wow.
Not enough hours in the day to see them all, although you often want to. 800 volunteers in the community,
wow.
And they've made this a fun event. It's so well organized. The ticket sales are computerized in a way that makes it incredibly easy to, you know, get to the festival.
And they sold almost 44,000 tickets for this thing.
Yes.
I just about fell off my chair when I saw
yeah.
that figure.
So it's hard to tell. I mean, my husband and I attended maybe a dozen films
wow.
out of the 37, but some people might just come for one movie. So it's really hard to
mm-hmm.
to figure out how many people were there, but I would venture to guess 30,000
mm-hmm.
possibly. It's just wonderful. Part of the fun is talking documentaries with other people, getting in line and saying, have you seen anything good? And you're like, oh, yeah, you got to see this particular film. And the fact that the proprietor of a restaurant was so accommodating, he even put on the KU basketball game on Saturday for me. I mean,
wow.
I just thought, well, they're really going out of their
yeah,
way to make this a
bad.
Good event.
You gentlemen been there?
I've been the last 2 years and talked about it a lot on the show and seen incredible stuff. This year's list, I was not moved by. And not interested in attending. So I had bought my ticket, but I know them who run it, and they gladly refunded my money. And mm-hmm. I'd seen two of them, which was very odd. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it just didn't add up to be a weekend away worth it to me.
And a lot of these films were shown at Sundance. So, I mean, Steve had access to reviews and articles about, you know, those particular films. A lot of them have this is their world premiere at Columbia. So... there's a real mix, and often, you know, until you just get in there and hear about something special. I think about the films that Ai Weiwei, Queen of Versailles, Sugar Man. I mean, there have been so many films that have risen to the top that had their debuts there.
Well, what films caught your eye this year as you were over there, Cynthia?
Well, it seems that there are often themes that are running throughout these films, and this year... It seemed to be the war in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
There was an amazing film I know is going to get national distribution. And I think HBO had already picked up several of these films, but it was Dirty Wars. It's investigative reporter Jeremy Scahill tracks down the murderers of a family in Afghanistan. And it's a real indictment of America's involvement in the war in Middle East and hit squads, and it's just very, very disturbing.
It what really else? Is. How about the film Manhunt?
Manhunt, for me, was a film so much better than Zero Dark Thirty.
Really? Really?
These are actual interviews with that core group of women who were analysts at the CIA who have been tracking these people involved in Al-Qaeda. And it's mesmerizing. I mean, you know the end of the story, but the way it's told, it's one to definitely, definitely look for. And I know it's going to get national distribution.
Did they show their faces?
Yes.
Oh, they
yes.
did?
Yes.
Well, you know, Jessica Chastain plays a sort
of
an amalgam of,
right.
of those women and,
right.
and has never admitted who or named the woman
right.
she's really playing.
And you see there's the story about the woman who actually died on one of the bases as a result of terrorists bringing a bomb on the scene. Which Way is the Front from Here? The Life and Time of Tim Hetherington. It was directed by Sebastian Younger, and
yeah.
we know him from Perfect Storm. And in 2010, he made Restrepo with a friend of his, a war photographer, Tim Hetherington. And
absolutely terrific film.
Wonderful
yes.
film.
American, a little squad up in the mountains
yep,
of
yep.
Afghanistan.
It's incredible.
And holding down a remote area, and then what happens to him. God, and the camera is right there
yep.
as the bullets are flying. Just amazing.
Well, if you like that film, keep a lookout for this particular movie. Restrepo was nominated for an Oscar, and Tim and Sebastian became good friends. And Tim wound up dying covering the Libyan civil war in 2011. And Sebastian Younger was devastated. This is his tribute to that war photographer, to a friend. Sebastian Younger was there. That's the other wonderful thing about True False, is that you have a chance to visit with filmmakers, with people involved in producing these films. They discuss the philosophy behind the kind of work that they're doing. So, and each year, instead of giving awards, True False raises money. They literally pass the bucket through the theater and raise money to give money to either filmmakers or people featured in a documentary film. Because often people say, gosh, what a devastating story. What can I do to help? Mm. And so this is a way of giving back, and it's called the True Life Fund, and donations were used to support a program to train combat photographers in first aid. It's called RISC, RISC, Reporters Instructed in Saving Colleagues.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking with our independent and documentary film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler, about the latest films to put on your radar screen. What else caught your attention from the True False Film Festival here?
Well, if you saw Chasing Ice, I have two companion films for you. The Expedition to the End of the World, about a village in Greenland, and the impact the world is having on them, and also Expedition to the End of the World. Well, anyway, it was often confusing as to the title of these films, but it's about a ship with scientists and philosophers and artists that travel through Greenland and offer their impression. It's not a heavy-handed environmental story. It's very subtle, but you do see what's happening to the planet. And my favorite film by far, because there were a lot of very heavy films. And I know, Steve, you're going
to
love this movie. It's called 20 Feet from Stardom. It lifts the curtain on the world of backup singers. And most of the Motown tunes had backup singers. And it's funny, if you stop and think about when you're singing along with the radio or with your iPod or whatever, it's usually the backup tunes that you're humming involved in performing yourself, as opposed to the lead singer off.
Yeah.
I didn't say that right. But anyway.
That sounds terrific.
They interviewed Bruce Springsteen, Mick Jagger, Stevie Wonder, Bette Midler, and they all just praised the role that these backup singers played in their own success. And Darlene Love was featured, Mary Clayton, who sang on Gimme Shelter. Director Morgan Neville got a standing ovation for his film. There weren't a lot of standing ovations this year.
I've never seen one at True False, actually.
Well, and usually it's when, one of the performers comes out or one of the – but it was right at the end of the film, before he even came out, people were on their feet cheering.
Boy, that just sounds great. We just
pretty
got a
cool
press release that indicates that Which Way is the Front Line, the Sebastian Younger film, is airing on HBO on April 18th.
Oh, great.
Okay. Terrific.
Just put that on your calendars. 816-235-2888. Is our phone number here. Marilyn from Kansas City, Missouri. Marilyn, good morning.
Good morning. Charles Peruzza called and told me that the show, the program was on, and suggested that I call in. I was at the festival.
Oh, wonderful.
I thought they did a lovely job. I mean, I was surprised at the attendance. I mean, it's huge.
Hi, Marilyn. This is Steve Walker. Was that your first one?
My first what?
True False Festival.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. And you had a great time.
I had a great time. My grandson's documentary was in it.
Whoa,
wow.
What was that?
Pardon me?
Do you know the title of the documentary?
Oh, yeah, The Institute.
Oh. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see it, but I heard some good things about it.
Did you?
Yes.
It's very, very complex. And but he got a standing ovation, and the Q&A, they just wouldn't let him go, and because he's very modest but very funny,
right.
And but it's interesting. He was just in he goes to Atlanta next to their festival, and he was in Mill Valley and in St. Louis.
We hope he enjoyed Columbia, Missouri's True False Film Festival.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it very much. I saw some of the. I don't have the names in front of me now, but I saw some of the movies.
Right.
But of course, I mainly went up to see the Institute.
Right. Well, Marilyn, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Cynthia, you mentioned that one of the films that was debuted at the True False Film Festival over in Columbia was Searching for Sugar Man.
Right, and this was last year. And we just want to say it went on to win the Oscar for Best Documentary Film.
Yeah.
And it's going to be showing, or it is showing, at Screenland Crown Center. And I really encourage people to see this film.
We have a little clip from Searching for Sugar Man.
There's one in there that's absolutely a killer. It's one of the saddest songs that I'm laughing, but it's one of the saddest songs that I've ever heard. And it's a very simple song. Hang on, I want to play this. Hang on. Okay, listen to these words.
Cause I lost my job 2 weeks before Christmas.
Oh, man.
And I talked to Jesus at the sewer, and the Pope said it was none of his goddamn business. While the rain drank champagne, my Estonian archangel came and got me wasted. Cause the sweetest kiss I ever got is the one I've never tasted.
And it really makes me sad because that was the last song that we recorded. And that was the last song that Rodriguez ever recorded. And what makes it even sadder was the album was released in November of 1971. And we expected big things, and it did absolutely nothing. And then 2 weeks before Christmas, Sussex dropped him off the label. And the very first line in the song, as if premonition, was, I lost my job 2 weeks before Christmas. Oh, man. I just think about that. This guy deserves recognition. Nobody in America had even heard of him.
That, of course, won the Oscar for Best Documentary Picture. If you love rock and roll at all, this is so almost like a fable about a man who made a couple of albums, vanished from the face of the earth, and while he was working as a construction worker in Detroit, he became famous in South Africa, where his albums became, I guess, someone said they were like the Bridge Over Troubled Waters by Simon and Garfunkel. They had that kind of impact with South Africans. It's just a great story of redemption and the weird workings of the music world.
Huh. Okay. And one of the most anticipated movies coming up, Cynthia, you mentioned here, is a film titled No.
Well, we won't go into great depth here because it opens April the 12th at the Tivoli and Fine Arts Theaters. It was nominated for an Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film from Chile, and it stars Gael Garcia, who is a huge star in Mexico.
Yeah.
And it's a fact-based drama about the use of an advertising campaign to unseat Chilean military dictator Augusto Pinochet in 1988 after 15 years in office. And this is where we can have somewhat of a conversation about what is a documentary these days. The filmmakers chose to use old cameras with the square format, use old film, so they actually melded documentary footage, actual archival footage of this time in history in Chile, and you couldn't tell where the actor, Gael, began and when the real characters who did participate in this event, who are also part of this, where they are in the film. So it's just a question. Why was it at the True False Film Festival? What is a documentary today? I mean, it has changed dramatically since we started talking about documentaries, even on this show.
Are you okay with this change?
I wasn't so much when I saw it. It's not a documentary. It's Gael Garcia Bernal playing a character. You can use archival footage. Argo does it. I mean, Argo did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a creative way to tell a story. To put it in a documentary film festival was sort of another sort of reason why I went, what are they doing? It's not a documentary.
Yeah.
And well, I haven't seen it, but it's not.
Well, this might be a good time to bring up a couple of new documentaries. One I want to mention, West of Memphis, opens today, I believe, right, at the Tivoli?
Yes.
Okay. Now, by now, I think most everybody is familiar with the case of the West Memphis Three, teenagers who back in the early 90s were convicted of a triple murder.
And we're going to talk about this film in our second half, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then, all right. Well, here's what I want to bring up.
Yeah.
Watching this movie, I found myself to be a little underwhelmed, not by the facts involved, the presentation of facts. Well, underwhelmed by the presentation of facts. What I'm trying to say is I have reached a point where I'm looking at documentaries as an entertainment form rather than as a journalistic form. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I
well,
guess it
but
does.
People
yeah.
are also jumping on Argo and
but
Zero
you want both. Yeah.
And Zero Dark Thirty and saying, "Well, this is inaccurate," and they're saying, "Well, wait a minute, it's not a documentary.
Right.
Well, you know, why are we getting criticized?" And now documentaries are saying, filmmakers are saying, "Why are you criticizing us? We're incorporating, you know, reenactments or whatever in our films."
If you look at the movies of say Errol Morris, who way back with the Thin Blue Line started introducing the idea of historic recreations of events in a documentary. He caught heat for that. Michael Moore, who is clearly goes into his movies
with an agenda.
With an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But the deal is they make wildly entertaining movies, movies that fascinate you. And I fear, personally myself, I'm starting to respond favorably to lies provided they are presented cleverly enough. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm getting at here?
Well, yeah, and every filmmaker has an agenda. I mean, to say only documentarians do is not true. Every filmmaker has an agenda.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But when you the whole idea of a documentary was you can rely on it. It's true. It really happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the point now where I'm not sure I can. When I write a review of a documentary, I don't have the wherewithal to decide what's true in it and what isn't.
Right.
I just simply have to say, what was it like to watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Did it suck me in? Did it convince me of its possibly blatantly wrong point of view?
Yeah.
And that I find to be kind of disturbing and unsettling because I don't know where my moral compass is anymore with documentaries.
Well, I have trouble with films like Zero Dark Thirty where you do leave the theater and you don't know what's real and what was fabricated for the film. As a journalist, I guess, but it drives me nuts. I don't know what to believe.
Well, let the buyer beware is sort of the, you know, if you're going to go see a movie, don't expect truth even from a documentary.
Well, at the True False Film Festival, I walk out of Dirty Wars furious that we have these hit squads around the world, and then I watch something like Manhunt behind the scenes at the CIA and saying, well, gosh, it's a good thing we do have these guys taking care of, you know, the terrorists. So, I you know, it's a very interesting time.
Well, this hour we're talking about the latest independent foreign and documentary films with our critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Let's touch on The Gatekeepers here, Cynthia, opening at the Tivoli later on this month.
Right, on March the 29th. And the reason we're bringing it up, it was at True False Film Festival, and it was nominated for Best Documentary. And it's
an examination of 45 years of Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yes.
A lot of conflict.
Well, it is an incredible documentary. The filmmaker interviewed six former heads of the Israeli Internal Security Service, Shin Bet. And these were men they assumed would never talk about this particular subject about the Israeli occupation. And they all seemed to open up and tell the truth from their perspective.
They're in their twilight years, and that may be why. It doesn't sound interesting. It's enthralling.
Really?
It's an amazing movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyone interested in the Middle East should see this documentary. I'm not kidding. It'll be at the Tivoli Fine Arts March the 29th.
How about some films opening up today? Steve Walker, let's turn to an ongoing documentary series. This film is titled 56 Up. It's a decades-long documentary project that began in 64. It follows 10 boys and 4 girls from the age of 12 until their current age of 56.
Well, it starts as at the age of 7, actually, and then it started as a television series. There were a mix of kids from very rich upper crust schools, and then there were kids from who lived in projects and were in lower class schools, basically. And so the point originally was to talk about class in Britain. Mm-hmm. And Michael Apted picked it up when they were 14, and he did another film, 21 Up, 28 Up, 35 Up, 42 Up.
I saw a bunch of those, yeah.
Yeah, and now we're at 56 Up. And if you've seen any of these, you will have to go back and see what is the status of these people we got to know through the films. And if you haven't seen any of the others, it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. because he shows footage from when they were seven. One kid talking about, I want to be a jockey, and I want to be a cab driver, and it's, he's 56 now, he's driving a cab, he was a jockey. Mm-hmm. That's one of the only kids who really got their dreams right to the T. Other people had, you know, grandiose schemes and plans and wishes and hopes, and we get to see them all these years later. It's an amazing experiment.
Steve, I sort of experimented by actually starting with the first film, and I watched every film in sequence, and then I watched 56. Now, not everybody has, 40 hours to sit down and do this, but it was worth the experience for me. It really was.
Well, you know, it may have started out with a sort of like political, sociological
bent
idea behind it.
Sure.
What it is now, it's a study of the human condition, of people growing old, having families, getting married, getting divorced, finding jobs, losing jobs, and you watch it, and at certain points, you're almost moved to tears by the recognition of these universal things that happen to all of us that make us human. Now, there are a couple things in this film that I found really interesting. One gentleman actually kind of attacks the filmmakers, and he says, this is ridiculous. You come and visit me for 1 week every 7 years. You take a few sound bites and people think they know me.
Right. That's very powerful.
That is very interesting. Because, and it also speaks to the whole documentary process as well.
Right.
It does.
You have another guy who dropped out because when he was in his 30s, he made some very nasty anti-Thatcher type statements. And he caught so much flack that he wanted to drop off the scene entirely and didn't participate for 20 years.
Wow.
He's now back because he has a band and he wants to promote it. Classic.
Right. And there's a kid in the scene at 7 and 14 and 21 who we don't see again. He's seen in the clips, and he's not followed up past 21, and you sort of wonder what happened to him.
Mm. Well, you know, think about living in a fishbowl.
Well, what he wound up working for the BBC, and he's a documentary filmmaker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Oddly enough.
Right? Yeah. But the clip we have is one kid named Paul who we're going to hear at various points in his life talking about his ideas of marriage and then what marriage really becomes.
Okay.
I don't like the big boys hitting us and a prefix sending us out for nothing.
When he was seven, Paul was in care in a children's home in London.
Were you happy at the children's home in England?
We didn't mind that, really, because we didn't know what was going on, because we were a bit young then.
Well, as far as I know, my mother and father got... Well, they separated originally, I think. They eventually got divorced. I went to the boarding school for 1 year, and then we immigrated to Australia.
Paul settled with his father and stepmother in a suburb of Melbourne.
Do you like to get married, Paul? Tell me why not.
I don't like, say you had a wife, say you had to eat what they cooked you, and say I don't like greens, well, I don't.
I know I prefer to be alone, really.
I can't say I don't want to get married, because I think I do. But I want to be happily married, you know, and therefore I want to make sure, I think.
What was it that you fell in love with? What is it about him?
His helplessness, I suppose. It was the motherly instinct in me to pick him up and cuddle him. And he's also very good-looking, I think, but he doesn't agree with me. And in the summer, he's got this cute little bum in shorts.
I mean, I can tell quite a few stories here, but the one that really irritates me the most is when we have an argument, he says, that's it, leave me. And I say, fine, all right, I will one day. Well, we had our 20th wedding anniversary this last Christmas, just before Christmas.
Which is the life sentence.
Yeah. Everyone reckons that we should be out of jail by now.
To a certain extent, we started thinking, well, do we really know each other now? Because you just get in the humdrum of going to work, coming back home.
Running kids here.
Kids here and there. And then, I don't think you mean to, but you probably stop thinking about each other a lot.
You know, it's still the last person you want to see at night before you go to sleep and the first person you want to see when you wake up.
Do you still like to cuddle and love and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, but not in public.
No.
You really do care for these people. I've seen all of the films as they when they came out, and you do.
You know, it's going to be heartbreaking when they start reporting that they've died.
Mm. Well, and there's a story in one of them. We really get to know at seven. He seems a little troubled even then. And in his late teens, early 20s, he was diagnosed as schizophrenic and was homeless. And he's okay now, but his life has been impacted by mental illness. It's very clear.
Wow. And there's another woman who lost her job to the economic upheaval.
I like
and people
that woman
are,
a lot.
People are now facing, the working class ones at least, are facing a golden age with limited income, reduced pensions.
And the thing is, as you guys will all back me up, they are so content. They've had a lot of knocks in their life, especially the people who grew up more modestly. They're so happy. At least what they show us on film.
I don't see much bitterness there.
I don't at all, no.
Yeah.
If you're interested in seeing those earlier episodes, they're available on DVD. I got the set from the Lawrence Public Library. And on the last disc, there's an interview that Roger Ebert does with the filmmaker. And it's quite interesting because Ebert says the Up series is the most noble use of film.
Huh.
And it has the most lack of pretension of anything he's ever seen. I mean, he just celebrates that movie. And a lot of people do. They think it's terrific.
And we were debating what a documentary is. These are people talking about their lives to a cameraman. This is a true documentary in its truest sense.
And this opens up today.
Yeah, it opens up today at the Screenland at Crown Center.
Okay. All right. How about a film? We talked about this subject on the show with one of the gentlemen involved here. This film is West of Memphis, Bob Butler. It's a documentary about three teens in prison for murder they claim they didn't commit, and pretty good evidence to suggest they didn't commit it.
Yeah. Well, in fact, they have been released in the last year.
Right.
With the bizarre plea deal, which I can't even begin to understand.
Yeah,
right.
Three films about this case have already been made by the filmmaking duo of Joe Berlinger and Bruce Sinofsky, the Paradise Lost series. And they were fantastic, but they didn't include the last chapter, which was the release. So this is Amy Berg's West of Memphis, which is sort of like the greatest hits. It's the whole story from beginning to end. If you don't know that much about the case, this is a great way to get all the details. They're presented very it's presented very carefully. She does a good job of creating an idea of the religious hysteria that surrounded this, because the prosecution tried to call this a Satanist murder, that these teenagers were Satan worshipers. Mm-hmm. They pointed out the bodies on marks on the bodies of the three murdered little boys, and one of the most fascinating parts of this movie is a scientist who shows that those marks were turtle bites when the boys were left overnight, the bodies in a water-filled ditch.
Oh.
So what was satanic markings on the children were turtle bites. This movie also goes out on a limb by naming what the filmmakers believe to be a stepfather of one of the boys who may very well have committed the murders. I'm not entirely sold. There have been no arrests, obviously. But very interesting.
It's an interesting story, and this is the fourth documentary about it, and I can't stand to see these three boys. They show the victims in graphic detail, three little boys murdered, and we have to see that four times. And I just find it was and I kind of am creeped out by the three guys. Yes, that the evidence said otherwise. You sat across from him, Steve, and interviewed one of them, the one who's become sort of famous for hanging out with Eddie Vedder and all these.
Mm-hmm.
What was your sense of this person?
Well, as much as you can get a sense during the course of an hour, I thought his story was fairly convincing, Steve. I guess, to be honest with you.
Well, so is the movie, and I'm not upset that they're out of prison. But no one's found who killed these little boys. And that bothers me that we've had four films about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me, going back to what I said before the break, this film is pretty workmanlike, but it's not inspired.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the kind of documentary that, you know, sends you out with an incredible buzz. And for my book, I mean, its presentation of the facts is pretty solid. It's just not interesting filmmaking for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a clip here, Bob.
Well, this is Nichols talking about, I believe, talking about the case.
Okay, from West Memphis.
West of Memphis.
West of Memphis.
Most people think that this case is something extraordinary. It's spectacular in some sort of way, and it's not. People like Burnett and Fogelman, they thought they could make a name for themselves off of this case because, really, you're dealing with three kids who were bottom of the barrel, poor white trash that nobody's ever going to ask another question about. He thought they would say guilty, this whole thing would be swept under the rug, the state would kill me, Jason and Jesse would spend the rest of their lives in prison, he would move up the political ladder. That's all he cared about. This case is nothing out of the ordinary. This happens all the time.
And he said something very similar to that on program here with him. So,
Steve, I also did the same thing with this. I watched Paradise Lost, Paradise Lost 2, Paradise Lost 3, and then watched West of Memphis. And it's an indictment of the justice system, much in the same way another documentary, Central Park 5, is an indictment of the process that was used to arrest some young boys for wilding and for assaulting a woman in Central Park. Talk about films making a difference. Peter Jackson saw these other Paradise Lost films and put his weight and his money behind investigations and lawyers and all to free these guys. So somebody was listening.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're running through some of the latest and best art and independent and foreign films. Now showing our critics today, as always, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Okay, let's move on to a film, Bless Me, Ultima.
Well, we had intended to review the film, but it's Left Town. So.
Oh, we're not going to review that one then.
No, we'll talk about it when it's on DVD.
That's a good reason not to review that one. Okay. Bob Butler, tell us about some stuff coming up at the library.
Well, first thing up, Charlie Chaplin, The Circus, with live piano accompaniment. That's 1:30 Sunday at the Plaza Branch. This is going to be freaking fantastic. Walter Bryant, who was the musical director at Worlds of Fun for many years, he's going to be tinkling the ivories. He has come up, he's written his own score based on Charlie Chaplin's own compositions, as well as his vast repertoire of circus music.
Wow.
It's going to be a hoot. Bring the kids. You will love it. 1:30 Sunday. A couple other things are going on. You know, one of the cool things about the library is we hook up these partnerships with various groups, and we put together special presentations. Right now, we're in the middle of our annual Searching the Psyche Through Cinema series, which is co-sponsored by the Greater Kansas City and Topeka Psychoanalytic Center. Our subject is Robert Altman, local guy. We're showing on March 17th, that Sunday at 3 p.m., Vincent and Theo, his story of Vincent van Gogh and his brother. A couple of psychotherapists will be on hand to talk about the implications of this relationship. Then, every Saturday this month, we have a series with the Sister City Association of Kansas City, the people from Seville. Almodovar movies, Almodovar's Women, and this weekend on Saturday at 2, Broken Embraces. Hey, these are all free, folks. Come on down and get yourself a dose of movie.
I told this story on the air, but it's worth mentioning maybe. I was in Spain when Los Obrazos Rotos, which is its Spanish title, opened with your girlfriend, Penelope Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never seen a foreign film in its own language in its own country. I don't speak Spanish. But he's such a good filmmaker and storyteller, I totally got the movie. And that was just an amazing experience.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. How about some French cinema, Steve Walker?
Rendezvous with French Cinema is back again at the Tivoli. It's ending up, it started last weekend, but it's ending up with a couple more titles up through Sunday, I believe. If we've talked about good documentaries, there's one today at 5 called Journal de France. It's about the documentarian Raymond Depardon and traces his life from a young, a brash, up-and-coming filmmaker when he was in his 20s up through he's now in his 60s and he's much more interested in photography. But it traces all of his films up through the present and how much political strife he went out and covered from Liberia to Haiti. It's very, very interesting and really well done.
How about some other special events coming up? One is the Suicide Shop tonight at 7:30 at the Tivoli and tomorrow at 5 p.m.
So that is also from the French Cinema Festival. It's an animated film about a strange family who runs a shop that abets suicide for people. They sell pre-noosed rope. They sell razors.
Yeah.
It's pretty entertaining, but their whole life and MO is thrown off when they have a new baby who's exceedingly happy.
Okay.
All right. It's very well. It's fun. It's hand drawn animation, and it's very lovely. Lovely. It's really well done.
Some theater coming up on the big screen too.
Right. We have La Scala Opera Sunday, March 10th, and Wednesday, March the 13th. Notre Dame de Paris. And the London Vaudeville Theater, also at the Tivoli, Great Expectations, Sunday, March the 25th at 1:30.
I bet that'd be good.
And also the UMKC Science Fiction Series begins March the 14th at the Tivoli. They've got Fahrenheit 451, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Dr. Strangelove, and Eyes Without a Face coming up. So just check their website,
tivolikc.com.
Something like that.
We'll put it on the website.
And we did want to mention an experience that Bob had talking about technology and new screens.
Okay.
And that's seeing Oz on the screen at the Union Station.
The less said about the movie, Oz the Great and Powerful, the better. However, it debuted the new Extreme screen at Union Station. Now, when they opened Union Station, they had this big, you know, IMAX-type screen. It showed science documentaries. It's been dark for almost a year while they tried to figure out what to do with it. And what they've decided to do with it is open it up like a regular movie theater, have Dickinson Theaters manage it, and show first-run films. It's the biggest screen in the area. The projection, the 3D projection, was fantastic.
Really?
It was unbelievable. The sound was tremendous. And actually, the price is right. For Oz, they're showing it five times a day, and tickets are $10 each, which for a 3D presentation is pretty great.
So you say the screen is huge. How big is the screen?
Five stories high, about 80 feet wide.
Woo.
Okay, that's big. A big screen.
And,
it's bigger than my TV.
And the you know, a lot of 3D projection I find to be dim and really kind of a hassle to sit through. This was just bright as could be. Now, here's the big question. First, can you attract suburban audiences downtown to see a movie when they've got a multiplex showing the same movie very close, you know, nearby?
Yeah, but that screen, though, that would draw
that might
me
do
in.
It. Yeah. It's going to depend, I think, on whether they can get the kind of movies that will attract hardcore fans, geeks, fanboys. Can you get the Marvel comic book inspired movies? Can you get the Batman? Can you get the science fiction, the Ridley Scotts? Those are the kind of movies that have an audience of people who will travel to see it on the best screen in town. And frankly, this is the best screen in town.
Just
well, good
very
to know.
Briefly, lots of films coming up, reasons to live in the film world in the weeks to come. What one or two or three would you point to real quick?
Koch, the documentary about Ed Koch, the three-term mayor of New York City, is opening at the Tivoli March the 15th. And these are just heads up to people. Before our next show, these will be opening. On the Road at the Tivoli March the 22nd. Also, Stoker, the Tivoli and Fine Arts, March the 22nd. And Happy People, a new Werner Herzog documentary.
New Werner Herzog documentary about a whole year-long season in Siberia.
Wow.
Very good.
I want to thank our film reviewers, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Thank you all for coming in today. The films we talked about today, plus our critics, three to see, and more information about our program is all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble, Beth Lipoff, and Danny Alexander. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.